Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Deanna Higuera. Deanna is executive director and founder of Denver's Rocky Mountain Welcome Center, an immigrant-led nonprofit organization in Denver dedicated to assisting immigrants and refugees and local community members as they work towards cultural understanding, acceptance, and eventually community integration. Deanna came from Venezuela as a master's degree student in 2005 to study international intercultural communication at Denver University. She had every intention of returning home to Venezuela after 2 years, but she met her husband and fell in love, and she made the United States her home ever since. I first interviewed Deanna in July of 2024 when the presidential campaign was in full swing and immigrants and refugees, particularly Venezuelans, were being vilified. I wanted to check in with her to see how the 2024 election had impacted the lives of the immigrants and refugees who depend on the Rocky Mountain Welcome Center for that welcome they so desperately need. Deanna Higuera, thanks again for joining me for Immigrant Stories. When we last talked, it was July of 2024, and a lot has changed since then.
Oh, yes.
Can you talk?
A lot has changed since yesterday, too. So it's an everyday thing.
Yeah. Muzzle velocity is what they're calling it. Yeah.
I'm not kidding. It's hard to keep up with everything changing every day and making such a big impact in a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, making sure that we're providing the right information so that people can take care of themselves in the best way they can.
How are they doing? I mean, you've seen a dramatic change since July, I would imagine.
Yes, we have. We have seen a dramatic change. It is weird to see. We were, before, like 3 years ago or 4 years ago, we were serving mostly, well, it depends on the wave of immigrants that we were seeing, right? So at some point, we were doing a lot of Africans, and then we were starting working with a lot of Afghans, and then we start seeing the Venezuelans. And now the Venezuelans and most of the people from Latin America are hiding, and we starting to see in our offices back people from Africa. And it's just that, you know, every day something change for someone.
Yeah.
So like yesterday or before yesterday, TPS was taking out for Haitian.
So temporary protection
status.
Can you explain that for the listeners?
So I'm not a lawyer, but this is a protection that the president gives to certain countries because they are in war or because something's happening in their country that is not safe for people to live there, and that gives them permission to be legal in the U.S. And also they would get a work authorization so they can work in the U.S. And Haitians have that status, and that was taken away yesterday, before yesterday. Officially, I think it is not, it doesn't start until, I don't know which date, but said yesterday, before yesterday. So, you know, that puts every day some of the population we work with, and of course immigrants are so many for so many different countries that there is always something going on for someone.
Well, on Thanksgiving Day, they rescinded the temporary protection for, 16 countries?
Yeah.
That came out on Thanksgiving Day. The timing.
And, yeah. And now they're revising also people that have given asylum since 2021 to now. So that puts a lot of people in very uncomfortable positions because they are people that have been waiting for 20 years for their asylum to come in.
Yeah.
And now they have to go through again. We don't know yet what that looks like, but they have to go about again through a process when they have been vetted and re-vetted. So we will see how that looks like.
Well, if it took 20 years to begin with, it's probably going to take at least that long, given the tenor of our country right now.
We don't know. We don't know yet what that is going to look like. The people that were waiting for so long, the cases had been delayed because the people that were coming in the pile went put upside down, so they were getting faster. And so I don't know. This whole process right now is weird and is uncomfortable because it's changing every day. So what today, you know, like today they say TPS is gone and then someone sues and then no, it's not gone. And then something else happened and yes, it's gone. And you know, it's like go back and forth until it goes to the Supreme Court and then Supreme Court says, okay, yes, it's differently.
Meanwhile, people are terrified and like you said, in hiding
and losing their jobs and not knowing what to do. And there are some people that are trapped because there are some people that want to go back home. Like they don't feel safe here. They rather go back home that at least they know the systems than not feeling safe in a country where they don't know the systems.
Right.
And are willing to go back home. But some of the people in the case of, for example, Venezuelans, they don't have a consulate here that can give them a passport if they don't have a passport. So they feel they're trapped, that they don't have a way to go back.
How does it feel for you as a Venezuelan?
This whole process has been emotional. I think that I am most terrified when they say that there is a possibility to be deported to a third country. Because that's when trafficking happened. If you are deported to your own country, you know your ropes, you have family, you know someone that even if you don't have a house there anymore, you may know someone who can help you out and you can stay and at their house. But if you go to a third country where you don't know anybody and you may not know the language and you just left there without money, it's terrifying.
Right.
And
you're much more vulnerable.
Yes. And I'm very concerned about people being deported and separating families because, you know, I have two kids and I cannot even imagine how that would look like or if they just take away my kids and they say you're deported and your kids go into the system. And that is happening. And I have families where I ask them, you need to do a plan. You need to have someone who will be in charge of your kids if you're deported alone. Like, who is that person going to be? And they come to me and they say, I just don't have anybody. Like, I don't know anybody who I can say, please take care of my kids if I get deported and make sure that you send them back to where I get deported to. And that's terrifying, not having or not knowing someone who can do that for you.
Yes. When we talked the last time, you were moving your parents from Venezuela to Spain. Mm-hmm. How are they doing?
They're doing great. It's a process, right? So the whole process of immigration, it's a very emotional process. Even though you know that you're going to be, in the case of my parents, they knew that they were going to be okay, it is always the curve that you have to go through of the sojourner's curve where you at the beginning very excited and then you go in the deep depression and then you start knowing the systems and the process, and then you go up again. And I think that everybody who has gone to live in a different country goes through that curve. And they are right now going through the good part of the curve, where they already have their own space and they already know and feel good about taking the bus everywhere, because it's a big change for them. It's a big change from, you know, knowing your surroundings and having a car and moving everywhere and having your friends to not knowing anybody, even though they're okay and my brother's there, but they still don't have their friends, don't have their support right. systems.
What are you left to do as the director of the Welcome Center when someone comes to you and says, I don't know what to do. I may be deported and my kids, what will I do with my children? You don't really have the resources to deal with that, do you?
You know, I have people asking me to take care of their kids. Wow. And that is very emotional, and I have to say no.
Yeah.
It is hard to say, hey, these are the policies, like the same policies that I put for my staff. It applies to me, right? And for me, it's even more emotional because a lot of the people are Venezuelans. And I have to say, hey, this is the policy. We can't take care of your kids. We are not in a position where I can take your kids to my house. And you know, right. We just have to prepare them because a lot of people, we have people that have called us. It's like, I took my husband. What do I do now? I'm trying to put them in contact with a lawyer. And these are the steps that you're going to do. But everything costs and they don't have the possibility to pay a lawyer for representation. So you give them kind of the ABCs. These are your rights. Tell your husband to do this, not do that. There are many organizations that have put Know Your Rights packages together. And we're very grateful that we are, as nonprofits, all working together. So if I don't do something else, someone else has the capacity to do it. And I feel that we're all surviving how we can. And I say surviving because this whole process, independently of the work, is very emotional for everyone. Very emotional for the staff, very emotional for all the executive directors. We are emotionally exhausted.
Yeah.
And we keep just working how we can, modifying our programs as we go, because every day is something different.
Yeah. So how do you as a group support one another?
We did create a secondary trauma support group that it is not only for our staff, but also for staff or any other organization that work with immigrants and refugees. We have a mental health department that we created this year. So we have therapists within our staff. So we try to have meetings where we talk to each other about what's going on and what's happening. Most of us are immigrants and refugees ourselves. So this all touch us firsthand, because if we are not immigrants or refugees ourselves, we are first or second generation. So I have staff that their grandparents were the ones coming, or I have staff that they are refugees or asylees. Hmm. And so it all affects us firsthand. And it is very emotional because we don't feel safe. Like I'm Venezuelan, I'm a citizen, but even though I'm a citizen, I don't feel safe. I feel that in any second, anybody can come and take that safety net of being a citizen away and I can be deported. And I know sometimes it's not even rational, but I just don't feel safe.
Well, because you see examples of yourself on the news.
Exactly.
People who are swept up, who are citizens of the United States.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not something that you're imagining. It's real.
So it is.
What comes up in those meetings, the secondary trauma meetings? I mean, the fact.
I think that is more about what we're seeing in the field. It's more about, you know, now I have this family that it's a single mom with four kids, and now she's sick, and they're going to take their kids away because she's sick and she can't take care of her kids. Or now I have this family that ICE just took them, and they were just going to school. And I was there when they were, you know, taking the kids out. It's just that it's more of a sense of it's nothing I can do to keep them away from danger. It's nothing. We are thinking that probably will be the next city that the National Guard will come to. And how do we prepare people? How does that look like? We don't even know how does it look like. So we are trying to prepare for the learning of other cities that have already gone through that. And you know, supporting each other, supporting, because it's not only happening to us here in Denver, it's happening in the mountains, it's happening in small communities. So we are trying all to learn from each other and prepare the best we can.
It's overwhelming. I mean, I feel helpless, but I can't imagine the helplessness that you feel when you're trying so desperately to welcome people, which is your mission.
Yeah. It feels that we are not a welcoming country anymore.
Yeah, it definitely
does.
So we're
just trying to mitigate the losses.
Well, your story of your parents coming to this country, which you should be able to welcome them. Instead, you were terrified.
And it is, you know, they're coming as visitors. They're not staying. They're not, and you just feel like I can't. I was imagining, you know, my 85-year-old dad being detained, and I'm like, and he's diabetic. What am I going to do with this? And, you know, like,
yes.
Nothing happened, but you catastrophize because you have seen that in other people.
Well, like you described, you know, you all, just the immigrant experience, you feel like a stranger in a strange land under normal circumstances. Under these circumstances, it is totally disorienting and terrifying.
And it is so unpredictable right now. And it breaks my heart that people that were so loyal to United States are going through this. Because let's say that we're only working, even the people that we work with that are refugees or the SIVs, sometimes these people are, for example, in the case of Afghans, they were people working with our military.
Yes.
And now they are going to be scrutinized again. They're people that didn't have enough time to bring their families and they're separated. And now they don't know if they're going to be deported back to a certain death. So we are betraying those who had been loyal to us. That breaks my heart.
So the Afghans have been stigmatized and are blamed. All the Afghans are blamed for the assassination that the Afghan visited on a National Guard person.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's having consequences. You know, it is already hard, and it's a cultural shock for our Afghan population because this culture is as far as it can get from their own. It is already hard. So we are seeing a raise on suicide, at least suicide attempts. Because in normal circumstances, it's already hard to come to a country that is so far away from yours in cultural sense. And they're very isolated and it's just hard. And it's making it harder for them.
Well, and so many of them helped us during the war.
Exactly.
And were told that they would have a place when they came here.
Exactly. And you know, I don't know what they imagine, but I'm sure that they imagine that they will come to a country that a lot of the things that they will give in, they would be provided for and helped, and it's not the case right now.
Yeah.
And as I said, in normal circumstances where you have the resettlement agencies waiting for them and giving them a home and helping them with language, and it is very hard in those circumstances. So now that there is less money, it's even harder. And less money because the resettlement agencies have been cut their funding in a lot of ways. So they have less to offer.
What can people do that may be listening to you and want to do something? What would you suggest?
I would suggest to become advocates. There are so many ways that they can advocate for the security of our people. And when I say security of our people, is not only the immigrants, but yourself, right? So right. ICE is coming to, right now they're profiling. So they're anybody who speaks Spanish, they come to them. Some of them are not even identified. So you feel that you're being kidnapped. Someone in street clothes took you with an unmarked car and you don't know where your loved is. You don't know if it was kidnapped and it's going to appear dead somewhere. It's just bringing all back all the thoughts of the country that they left. Right. And it's happening here, right?
We are recording this in December, mid-December. And the Christmas holiday is about the birth of baby Jesus. But 2,000 plus years ago, a man and a woman were having a conversation about where they needed to go to get away from the bad people.
Yeah. History repeats, right?
Yeah. The irony is way too much for me.
I don't think that I ever thought that I will be feeling unsafe in a country like this.
No.
And there is a lot of deja vus, right? On parallels. Of course, the difference of Venezuela and the U.S. is huge. We hope that we do have here in our country more balances and more laws that will check things.
Right.
But I don't think that anyone who was born in a different country feels safe right now.
So, talk a little bit as we close just about Venezuela, the country that you love and the people that you love that you had to leave behind. And
I think just
as a counter to some of the stories that are being told.
Venezuela is a country where we are always happy, no matter what. I feel that people put their sorrows in songs and in dancing. And so we just dance everything out.
Yeah, I read a quote that you talked about dancing your sorrows away.
We do. We just we don't need much to have fun. We just need music, and if we don't have music, we make it. And we dance everywhere, no matter where we are, because that makes us happy. And we are a happy country. I always tell my Venezuelan clients to put it down a notch. Because every time I see a car that is all about to fall apart with music full volume, is a Venezuelan for sure. And I'm like, guys, put it down. You know, put up the windows, music down, because you're an easy target. So, you know, we, no matter where we are and how much money we have, we are happy people. And our Christmas music that is called Gaitas, it sounds like salsa. It's just very up and beat and dancing. And we hear that, and for us it's like, oh, Christmas is here. But it's also about dancing. So I feel that in the future, where things get better in Venezuela, I have no doubt that at some point it will get better. it is a great country to visit. I'm really hoping that better times are going back to Venezuela, and a lot of people will go back, because for any immigrant, no matter where you're from, there is no better place to be than home. And it doesn't matter what home looks like. It's just home.
Yeah. Yeah, we need people like you and all those Venezuelans you just described. That's the dream of the United States. That's what built us, all of us together, creating a diverse and beautiful society where everyone can sing and dance. I love what you said. We are proud. We stand tall. We are resilient. We carry joy in difficult times. We dance our sorrows, and we find strength in each other. Amen.
We do.
Felicidades. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, and to everyone who is listening, even if they don't celebrate Christmas. Merry whatever you celebrate. It's time to celebrate with family and with friends.
Thanks for all you do and have done to make this country as great as it needs to be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for saying that.
That was Diana Higuera, director of the Rocky Mountain Welcome Center. If you'd like to give the gift of your time or your money, please consider these organizations: Rocky Mountain Welcome, all one word, .org, or Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, .org, or Voces Unidas, .org. That's VOCESUNIDAS. Special thanks to Diana and all the people like her who are devoted to giving shelter and refuge to those who have lost their country. Thanks for listening.